This is CliffCentral.com. Animal Central on CliffCentral.com.
Welcome to it. This is Animal Central right here on CliffCentral.com. Thank you so much for having us on. So first things first, I do not sound like Ainsley Haynes, nor am I Ainsley Hayes. Ainsley is away this week, but we thought, why not? You know, if not, then why not? Stand in for one of our Cliff Central crew family. And so I think we're about to have a bit of a very, very interesting hour. I'm not running the show alone. I'm here with Jonathan Sinclair.
Yes, good morning. I was just about to say, Ainsley, you sound a little bit different
today. It's not even like a hoarse voice. Yes. It wouldn't even be like the flu. I think it would be a whole lot of chemicals, whatnot, get into it.
You know, Ainsley did have a life emergency. You know, we all have those days. So we didn't want to send the guest away because it's such an interesting topic we've got today. So we thought we must run ahead with the show. And
So I'm very, very interested to get the conversation going this afternoon. So if you also want to join in on the conversation, you know, you can always tweet us at cliffcentral.com, or you can send us a message on our WeChat account. It's Cliff Central. All you have to do is tap connect and then message to show. So today is really all very, very interesting. It's something I have a very close connection to. I've always been an animal lover in general. Don't let me start on my monologue as to why I'm vegetarian. But that aside, I've always been a dog person. I absolutely love dogs.
And it's sad that we have to have dog and cat people, but
I think it's kind of clear sometimes.
I classify myself as a dog person, but that I love cats. You don't like cats?
I just have to say, dogs, at least when they're happy, they show it, or when they're angry, they show it, or when they're sick, they show it. Cats, feel like they're kind of manipulative. They never show their feelings.
They are too clever. Although, you know, in my household, it's the cat who actually needs more attention than the dog.
That's true. Like, dogs are just weird, chilled and calm. I remember for the first, 8 years of my life, I had a dog named Sheba, and she and I, like, go out to the garden, Sheba's there. Like, watch TV, Sheba's there. Like, it's the best thing in the world. Cats on the other side, maybe not for me, really.
Yeah, cats will just come and they'll never give you any support. They'll come to you if they need something. Yeah. Otherwise, stay away.
By the way, I don't think I actually introduced who I was.
Sir Sangwenny Finn.
There we go. Yes, I actually thought about it now. I was like, I had this whole disclaimer about Ainsley not being here. And they're like, who is this guy, basically? So my name is Sir Sangwenny Finn, and thank you so much for having us on. Let's get things rolling right away. Very, very interested to chat to our first guest this afternoon. Her name is Stacey Keane. Good morning, Stacey.
Hi, Sia. How are you doing?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
Very well, thanks.
So, Stacey, I think she can definitely introduce herself from the Bruntville Dog Project. Can you sum that up for us, first and foremost, before we get into the bigger conversation of the work that you guys do? But as an organization, what is it all about?
Well, the Bruntville Dog Project, we are a community-run welfare charity in the KwaZulu-Natal Midlands, specifically Mooiriver, the local township of Bruntville.
Mm-hmm.
We focus on teaching children how to train their dogs. So the everyday basics, sit, lie down, stay, and through that, develop the bond between child and his dog.
Yeah.
By doing that, we obviously focus on the welfare of the dogs. We also aim to teach the children about animals in our world. So everything from where our food comes from, where our car seats come from, to, you know, the milk in our coffee.
Yeah.
Why pets are important to us for things like security, you know, in terms of dogs. And then hopefully in the long term, what we'll do is we'll plant a seed in the child's mind. You know, if they're 8 years old now, perhaps they'll think, wow, I really love working with dogs.
Yeah.
And give them some sort of career direction for one day when they have to, you know, leave school, get a job, or go and study further. So it's a small project at the moment, but we really hope to, you know, the opportunities are really great. So we hope to be able to allow the children of this township, multiple opportunities so that it's not just a case of one day they leave school and they get a job, you know, a boring, mundane job just to put put food on the table. So hopefully we'll ignite some passion in these children.
What I like is that you teach the kids that the animal is not just an object.
Yes.
Or like you say, you teach them where our food comes from, where our milk comes from. So almost teaching them that the cow, although it is serving us, it isn't just a standalone object that has no feelings or isn't a sentinel being. I think that is the message that you're getting across, you know?
Yes, definitely. And also respect for the animals. So even if it's a goat running around the township, or a chicken, you know, trotting along the road. Every animal actually deserves respect and that every animal provides us with so much. And I think we're very ignorant of that, of exactly what we use animals for. I mean, things like glue, we didn't know that comes from cows. People don't know that kind of stuff.
Hold up. Okay, I'm really going to like have an education here, clearly. To go off on a slight weird tangent,
yes.
Glue comes from cows.
Yes. So one of the first educational days we did with the children.
Yeah, okay. Talk to me like you talk to the seven-year-olds.
Was about the humble cow.
Okay.
Now, my family, we are dairy farmers in the Tull Midlands, and we are very closely linked to this township that we work in because all of our staff live in this township. So when I thought, okay, I want to do an educational segment with these children, I thought, well, you know, the dog, that's basic. But I thought, let me open their eyes to something more complex, such as dairy farming. So I researched it. I did quite a bit of research.
Yeah.
And I was slightly shocked. So it's true. Yes, they use the hooves, the gelatine, to make glue. So your everyday prit, whatever, has got cow hooves in it.
Wow. I think at the end of the day, that is a good thing because if, you know, the cow is going to be utilized for food anyway, as sad as that might be, at least use the whole animal and not certain things go to waste, if you think about it like that.
Well, Stacey, I'd like for us to first start off by painting the picture of the reality that you faced and you've come from. What sort of community is the Brunnville community? And, you know, what inspired you and your family to get involved in such?
Well, the Brunnville community, it's quite a small township in comparison to a lot of our city townships. I was trying to do some research on the population. It's a bit vague, but I would say they're probably about 40,000 people in the township.
Okay.
A lot of the people in the township don't actually work in the area. They travel to the city, so Johannesburg, Durban, for work, and then come home in the holidays. Quite a few truck drivers, stuff like that. Being white in South Africa, a lot of people are petrified of townships. Like, oh my word, don't go there.
Going with the bulletproof vest and the helmet.
Yes, exactly, and a security guard and whatever. But my experience with Brunnville has been completely the opposite. The people are really welcoming. You know, they really notice that you're there to help. And they, you know, go out of their way to look after you. And people get to know you. I mean, I go to the supermarket now and little children come up to say hello to me because they've seen me in the townships. So I think that it's actually a lovely place. The children all grow up, you know, on the streets visiting their friends. There's no my house, your house. I think it's a very nice township. Yeah.
Would you have to say you've always been an animal lover?
Yes, definitely. Since I was a baby.
Really?
Yes. Always had pets, always had dogs.
Yeah.
I wanted to be a vet when I was tiny. And then discovered that my mathematics weren't so good, so I studied veterinary nursing. Animals my whole life.
Because this is now the interesting thing, you know, as someone who also grew up around animals, and you just love them unconditionally, and you go into some areas of, you know, the country and different communities, and you see that it's not necessarily that they're ill-treating animals intentionally, it's a lack of knowledge or education.
Exactly.
So we'll feed the dog just scraps, you know, meanwhile you don't know what sort of damage is being caused to the animal.
Yeah.
So when you tackle something like that, you know, because now you're essentially having an education role, why, you know, I think it's one thing to be inspired by the cause, but then it's another facing reality of, okay, well, how am I going to tackle this problem? And how did you go about doing that?
Well, it's funny you should say that. This last week, we have our classes on a Saturday morning at 7:30. So what happens is that the children come along with their dogs. They have to wear a lead and look at the collar. The children have to wear their name tag. So I know, we all know who's who in the zoo, because with 60 children and 60 dogs, you don't know.
I can imagine it's chaos.
Oh, it is complete
chaos. It's a literal
chaos.
Zoo now that I think about it.
It is mad. And then we also get dogs that come by themselves. They just they don't have a human, but
they're
just
saying the party or the other, all the other dogs are walking. So why not? Yeah.
So this last Saturday, some of our children who are regulars came along and they didn't have their dog. So I said to them, you know, where are your dogs? And the one little boy, his name's Mfana Futi, started crying. And I said to Mfana Futi, where's your dog? No, he said, one of the older boys in the community has taken his dog along with a few others to go hunting on the local farms. So
it's like a kidnapping scam.
it was kind of weird. Three little teary-eyed children, desperate for to have their dogs back and very worried about where they were. And so that was a huge like education opportunity, but also a huge challenge. So every week I try and post very positive, happy things on Facebook, you know, about relationships between children and their dogs, happy things. But I thought, you know what? It's actually, we face such big challenges. I'm not going to, you know,
sugarcoat it
and, you know, tell everyone we're having a great time. So I said no. So now hunting in a lot of African cultures, it's something that's done, you know, in 100 years ago, people used to go hunting with their dogs for food. And I mean, I can't condemn that. People are hungry, people need food, so that's fine. But in modern times now, it's actually illegal to hunt with your dogs. And in areas such as ours and wherever, if people are hunting with dogs, they're trespassing onto other farmers' lands. We have some antelope that are quite special in our area. And so obviously hunting with dogs is going to ruin the chance of those species taking off. So it's so difficult because so many of those children, they would have been growing up with their grandfathers hunting, you know, going back to the mountains for the holidays, and everyone's doing it. And now here I am and I have to say to the kids, actually, it's not right. Mm-hmm. It's not okay to do that. So that is a huge challenge, educational challenge. So this week on Saturday, hopefully we'll be looking at that with the kids. So, yeah.
I would imagine also just going hunting with a dog that isn't properly trained to hunt could be quite cruel to the animal that's being hunted
if the
dog doesn't know how to kill it quickly.
And also the actual dogs. I've seen quite a few dogs that have had like broken legs from hunting and things like that. And quite often they won't get veterinary attention and they'll suffer away. So, but I mean, it's a huge thing. It's a cultural practice. So how do you stop that? We might think it's cruel, but a lot of people think, oh, well, it's a dog. That's what it's there for. It's difficult. There's such a fine line.
Because that was going to be another interesting point I wanted to know more about. What, you know, the community of Bruntville, are they, you know, at a point where they can take care of their animals properly? Or, you know, do they view dogs, for example, as a member of the family? Or is it just like, you're here, it's either you're here to protect, or you're here to hunt for us, or, you know?
I think Bruntville, as far as township goes, I used to work for an organization that did sterilizations throughout townships in KwaZulu-Natal. It was a government-funded organization called Outreach KZN. So every second week, we'd go to a new township and we'd sterilize between 200 and 250 dogs and cats. Now, after going around the province and seeing various townships, I definitely think that the dogs in Bruntville are some of the most well-looked after dogs that I've met. We've actually, in our class, we've got a few obese dogs. Which is, you know, the irony of it all. Everyone thinks, oh, the township, you know, we've got these skinny dogs running around, and we actually don't. So the dogs are really well looked after. In terms of the family, we do have some dogs that are, you know, very much part of the family. You know, they're put inside and they're fed, you know, and go for walks, and they're really loved and pampered. And then we have some that are tied up outside and just kind of left. But I definitely think they, you know, we can notice a change with the children. You know, they slowly starting to change the behavior in the household, you know, towards the dog. So it's a slow process, but I definitely think the influence upon the adults in the family, the grandparents, the parents, you know, change of attitude towards the animal, it's starting to spread. So we'll have to see where we are in a few years' time and see.
I remember once on the show, we discussed the importance of giving the animal a name, because sometimes it'll just be the dog that lives outside, and especially for the kids, and especially in service animals, like if they have a pony or something like that serves them, to give it a name, and then they see it, you know, relate to it more as a human as opposed to an object.
Yeah, relationships, yeah. Mm. So on our project, we have some really fantastic names. We've got one dog called Mlomo.
Mlomo, which means mouth, doesn't it? Okay.
So that's quite interesting. And then we've got a few dogs called Spinashi.
Okay.
Which is also...
Spinach.
Yeah. Spinach. Very interesting. And then we've got Mehlo Mlungu, which means white eyes, but she's got brown eyes.
Have you ever thought to question the naming process?
Should it not be
like a little module you guys do in the project?
But it's so special to see the relationships. I'm trying to think of some of the other names that we've got that are really fantastic. We've got a lot of Snoopies and a lot of puppies. I'm starting to get to the stage where I feel like saying to the children, listen, I'm sorry, this is going to be puppy number 25. You need to say
to calm it down somewhere. You know, Stacey, I'd like to know, when you started off initially with this project, what were some of your objectives, and do you feel like you're actually seeing those coming to life and you can tick off certain boxes?
When we started, I didn't think, right, these are my objectives, this is what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
We were inspired by a project called Funda Nanja in Mpopomeni Township, which is about half an hour away from us. And that's run by a lovely lady called Adrian. She's a dog trainer, and her friend Heather. And that project, they have between 80 and 100 dogs every week. And so we were very inspired by that. Temba, who's my Induna on my part of the farm.
Now we have to break that down. Nduna, isn't that like a spiritual or like an elder?
No, well, it's like an elder. In my team of staff that I have on the farm, he's the supervisor for the staff. So he's my right-hand man.
You hear about nurses. You can hear about supervisors, but you don't get Nduna every single day. Yes.
Yeah, well, there we go. So I had to take Temba to the closest city for a medical thing. And on the way back, I said, Temba, I'm so sorry, but you're just going to have to come with me. I have to just go and check at this project I was volunteering at the time as a veterinary nurse. And Temba, when he arrived, his eyes were like saucers, and he said to me, this is amazing. We need this is fantastic. So Temba lives in Bronville, and I said to him, Temba, that's great. We can try to do it, but I cannot do it by myself. Me as a small white girl, I can't go into the township and just organize the whole thing. If you want to do it, that's great, but then I need your full commitment. So he said, no, we're going to do it. So I said, okay. So off we went to the township, and I think the first day we had about 10 dogs.
Mm-hmm. What is the reception to you starting this project?
Well, I think there was a private project running previously by a lady called Moira. Unfortunately, it kind of phased out. She had some family issues that she had to sort out. So there were some people that remembered the dog project of old. So we did have a few people coming in and kind of getting the attention from that. But I don't know, it's just grown. The kids know. The kids talk about it at school, and all of a sudden you'll have children from the other side of the township walking all the way.
Wow.
Because they've spoken to their friend at school, and they want to.
I think it's just as good for the kids as it is for the animals.
It's such a fantastic
bringing
thing.
Everyone together.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And I would imagine that training the dog just really helps out everyone. So perhaps the dog, now that if it's trained and the people know how to communicate with the dog, that the dog can maybe be allowed inside the house, maybe not have to sleep outside, can maybe go for walks with the family because it's been trained.
Yeah.
So I think it really just improves quality of life all around.
Oh, it does, yeah. No, it's huge. See, I forgot what your original question was.
Sorry, I'm going off track.
No, it's fine. We just following.
Your initial objectives.
Yes, the initial objectives.
The inspiration behind that and how you're seeing that paying off now.
Yeah, so like I said, I didn't have any initial objectives, and we just kind of started, but I mean, now when a kid phones me during the week and says, Stacey, my dog's not well or something like that, I just think, wow, that
what
wouldn't have happened 6 months ago. Yeah. They wouldn't have even noticed.
Yeah.
So I think, jeepers, we're really seeing things paying off. And also children developing, children becoming really focused and, working at that and goal setting and things like that, which are such important life skills. So from having no objectives, we've really achieved quite a lot.
I wonder if any of the kids don't have dogs, maybe want to come along, what I mean?
Yeah, like, so that happens a lot. And we have quite a few spectators. Okay. So quite a few kids will come along, and then we've got hula hoops. So they'll play with the hula hoops and just watch. Then, oh my word, if someone cannot take their dog to class, that dog is the thing of the moment and the kids will fight over who is going to take the dog to class.
Yes.
So it's really it's fantastic. I mean, the community is so involved.
I would imagine a lot of parents are getting requests now, you know, mommy, we need a dog.
Oh, yeah. We've had a lot of people going out and getting puppies, which is a double-edged sword because I'm not one for breeding. However, I do think that, you know, those puppies would have been bred anyway. So if at least they're getting into a good home, we vaccinate them at a young age, getting them sterilized, they've got a better quality of life, better chance of life. And if we were able to sterilize all of the puppies, slowly the breeding will slow down because, you know, ultimately we'd want everything to be sterilized, but that's that's a huge challenge. So, yeah, no, people are definitely getting dogs to get involved, which is great.
So I think more than actually raising awareness on the Brunfield Dog Project, which I think is awesome as we're talking about it now, I'd like to get to know more about you in the sense of someone out there, you know, whichever community they're in, not just Brunfield, but to understand what they're getting themselves into when they undertake a project like this.
Wow, yeah.
So for you personally, when you look back at the last couple of months, what are some of the big lessons that you've learned or some of the, you know, few key notes that you'd like other people to know?
I think probably the first key note would be
patience.
At the end of the day, I mean, some classes are chaotic, and by the end of it, I think, oh my word, I've sprouted another 100 gray hairs and I'm going to go home and I'm never going to do this again. But at those moments, I remind myself that as long as each child's picked up something or learned something or done something that they can take home with them and they'll remember, then that's fine. We've achieved. That's great.
It'll pay off in years to come when they pass those lessons on to other children.
We also, when we do educational things, we print out pamphlets. So, for example, recently we did a educational thing on why it's important to sterilize your dogs. So we do, you know, with little pictures so that it makes it easier for the children to understand. And then some of my guys on the farm translate it into Zulu for me, and then I type it out and print it out for the children. So, for example, with the sterilization one, things like unwanted puppies running around, things like cancers that are transmitted by dogs, diseases, STDs, fighting between male dogs, you know, over territory and stuff if they're not sterilized, difficulty giving birth for the bitches. What else? I can't remember now. So those little papers will go home with the kids. And, you know, if someone picks it up in the house and reads it, well, that's great. Someone learned something that day. So
I suppose it's also good to just have your contact number around. Like you say, if the dog is sick and it's suffering and they need a point of contact, who do I call? At least they have one person.
So my number started circulating the township now, and I get phone calls from people who don't even come to the project. You know, adults that are concerned about their dogs. So that's really great that there's awareness out there about the importance of looking after your animals.
In terms of the framework and regulations and, you know, surrounding communities, are you getting, you know, good support in the animal world for this project?
Yes, very good support. Living in a small town and having my family who's been there for, you know, years and years and years, all of the businesses in town know us. So, for example, the local Super Spa sponsors snacks for our children.
Once a month,
which is really fantastic. Then the local farming co-op sponsors feed for us for one class a month. Our veterinary clinic, more of a veterinary clinic, they are amazing. They are really, really generous with their treatments, which helps us out a lot. The veterinary wholesalers in town, they donate a lot to us as well. And then we have a lot of really generous people in the community who would just write a check and, you know, hand it over. So we're very spoiled, actually. Very spoiled. Yeah.
I would imagine working in areas that aren't, maybe not necessarily poor areas, but where money might be a challenge. And for a family who's battling to take care of themselves, to then take care of their pet properly
is
quite a challenge. You know? So I wonder how you work around those challenges.
So we give out a yogurt tub container of food to our children every week for their doggy. And then what I've noticed a lot of the families do is they mix the putsu, the maize meal, with a few dog beans, with some family leftovers, so a gravy or something like that.
It sounds good.
Well, the dogs are great. The dogs are fat. They're not complaining. So, you know, they really try. We do have instances, you know, when there's a veterinary need, I do approach the families and say, you know, I'll help you out, but please will you pay 10 rand or 5 rand or something like that. Just because I don't want to just become the local the person who just dishes out. And, you know, the families really need to appreciate that. So recently, one of our a grandfather of one of our children, he came to me and he said his cat was sick. So I said, no, that's fine. So sorted out his cat, and it ended up costing a little bit. And I said to him, you know, he said he doesn't have any money. So I said, that's fine. You can come and do a day's work on the farm. Mm. So we're still waiting to organize that. But just, you know, giving back, you know, I don't want to be just giving all the time. I don't think that that's a good life skill to teach.
Mm.
So, you know.
Yeah. No, but I really think at the end of the day, the animal does benefit.
And hugely.
I think although you may not get always the gratitude needed by the person, I think knowing in your heart that that animal isn't suffering anymore is...
Yeah, no, but we do get a lot of gratitude. I don't think there's been an instance where I've thought, oh, for heaven's sakes, I'm helping you so much. You know, you could just smile or say thank you.
Yeah.
It's never like that. They're really, really grateful. So,
Well, more than that, you've also opened my eyes, Jonathan, by actually, you know, letting me know that the real reward will come when these kids are grown up adults as well, and they make the right informed decisions, because really at the end of the day, that's what a true legacy is all about.
Exactly.
So as it trickles down,
and that's how education works, passed from one generation to the other.
Absolutely. So all of this and so much more, it's very, very interesting getting to know more about you, Stacey. But straight after this, I'd like to know more about the future of the Brunville Dog Project. This is Animal Central right here on cliffcentral.com.
cliffcentral.com.
Animal Central on cliffcentral.com.
This is Animal Central with myself, Sia Sangwenifin, standing in for Ainsley Hayes, and I'm not going with this alone.
Yes,
right?
I'm here too, Jonathan Sinclair.
I was waiting for like
I thought you were
going
to introduce me, man. I'm used to being, you know, announced.
Oh,
I don't announce myself.
Excuse us, King Jonathan. And we've been chatting to Stacey Keane from the Brunville Dog Project based in KZN. I just found that out. We're both... No, there's no cool term for people from KZN. There's like Durbanites and Joburgers. There's no KZN-ers.
Italians, maybe.
Thank you.
But we know what you guys call us.
Joburgers.
No, you don't call us that. To our faces, you call us that, yeah.
What do we call you guys?
You guys call us Varleys.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. I've been called a Varley so many times in my life.
Varleys have invaded the coastal towns wearing shorts and slubs, trying to fit in with us.
Yeah, you see all these GP number plates just invading. You must hate us.
Thank you for bringing that up. Now I feel better about myself, about the truth. The truth will set you free. So, Stacey, you know, a little before this, we've been chatting to get to know more about you and the Brunville Dog Project and the amazing work that you guys do. And actually, it's funny. You raised up this point by just telling us more about the work that you guys do. You know, you have classes with young kids once a week on a Saturday morning, and you said the classes started at 7:30.
Yes.
Jonathan and I gave each other like little looks, is he talking about? But why do you specifically actually start at 7:30? I find that very fascinating, for lack of a better term.
So during winter, we started at 11 o'clock, which was great because the staff on the farm have completed their work for the day. So after that, we'd go through to the township and then the staff could just stay at home.
11 o'clock I could do.
Yes, 11 sounds better because it's a Saturday, but you have to start at 7:30 because of the heat.
Yes, it is so... Well, in December, we had a bit of a heat wave and it was completely unbearable. So for all of us, especially the dogs, it's much cooler. It's 7:30 in the morning, and even that by 8:30 is blooming hot.
Really?
And we all run home. So
I was also thinking, you said a lot of the kids are walking quite far with the dogs, so you don't want, you know, heat stroke or
things
dehydration
like that.
Issues.
Also, there are quite a few young puppies that are brought, you know, from the homes, and we're out in the sun. So we want to kind of encourage a bit more. Take your dogs home and put them in the shade.
I'd have to say that is quite a... I think you can pat yourself on the back for this. The mere fact that it is a Saturday morning, you know, these kids could be sleeping in, and it's 7:30 a.m. that early, and they're willing to stand in the heat of the sun just for their dogs. I think the message is definitely hitting home about the importance of taking care of your pets, if they're you know, willing to make all these sacrifices. So kudos on you, hey. That's
thank you.
Really, really awesome.
But you know, the dogs also pick up on that routine. I think they know when it's a Saturday morning.
They know
when they hear the sound of their leash, and I think they know where they're going.
They
and I'm
do.
Sure they love it. Like
the
highlight. It's probably the highlight of their week, their lives. So
Well, when we drive through the township, we pass quite a few of the homes where the dogs live, mm-hmm. and all the children see our vehicle and they all, you know, their little eyes light up and they quickly run home to fetch their leash because they know no dogs without their leashes. And all the dogs kind of congregate in the street and there's lots of barking and carrying on. Yeah, and then everyone
exactly
chops up to the field.
What time it is.
Oh, they know.
Now, I kind of feel like an underachiever in life because I've always been a dog person. I've always had pets. But all throughout my 21 years, my 20-odd years in life.
He just revealed his age.
Anyway, yeah, because usually I'm like, oh, two decades, whatever. My 21 years in life, I've never been able to train my dogs, like, to sit or to fetch. Or, like, I feel like my dogs are too sassy. I tried to teach them to fetch once. They just looked at me like, you really expect me to run for that? So how's that training process like? Because sometimes you really do, you encounter these fully grown dogs.
Yes.
And are they really, like, able to be trained?
They are, definitely. Me personally, I'm not much of a dog trainer. In my family, my boyfriend does it.
Yeah.
I think I'm too soft. Yeah. But my guys from the farm, so Temba, Bongani, and Jabulo, and Sandile, they are
shout
really
out to
good.
All of them.
Shout
yes.
out, guys.
What goes into training a dog?
So we do what you call positive reinforcement training. So using food. So you would teach the dog. For example, if you want the dog to sit, you would, you know, hold the food in your hand and hold it above the dog and move your hand slightly forward so that the dog would lift up its head to look at the food and maybe try and walk backwards a little bit, which would encourage the sit. Then once they've done it, you obviously give them the command, sit. And then, as my staff would say, brasha, brasha. So you pat the dog and you give the dog food. So that it learns the command.
Okay. Yes. So how many times does this need to be reiterated? Like, do these kids technically have homework during the week?
Yes, they do.
You know, to go home and to brasha, brasha during the week.
Yes, no, they definitely do. And we have some children that go home and come back and they've taught their dogs to leopard crawl and bow on command what? And shake paws and alternate paws. And
I can't tell you. I
need to go home and teach Groban something or the other. Like, really, Groban, you need to brush up on things.
Yeah. But I mean, you're not trying to teach them to jump through hoops and stuff. It's basic commands that just make life easier.
Well, we do the jumping through hoops as well.
What? Okay. Shut me down.
We start with the basics. The basics are important. We start with the basics and then we work from there. So the kids do have homework. They go home and you can see who's been practicing and who hasn't been practicing.
But you know, as if you're not inspiring enough, Stacey, here you are. You're now part of a family who actually owns a farm.
Yes, my family are dairy farmers. We own a beautiful farm in the Natal Midlands.
Mm-hmm.
Near
Did
Moy
you
River.
Grow up in this atmosphere, in this farming
I
atmosphere?
I grew up on this farm, yeah.
Yeah.
So my grandfather farmed there for many years, and my dad subsequently bought the farm next door and now leases back the family farm, and we've bought a few adjacent farms. So we live very close to town. We're about 2.5 kilometers from the township, and all of our staff that work on the farm live in this township, and then mm-hmm. they have a taxi that brings them every day. So that's mainly why I think my family and I have been so involved trying to, you know, promote this project and all of that, because that's where our people come from, that's where our team comes from, and giving back to the community that actually makes our business a success.
And as well, it's a reality you see every day that you cannot avoid. So
no, you
of
can't.
Course yeah it's
you
no
can't.
Surprise that you guys are involved in this. But they, you know, when I think of like a cow farm, you know, dairy farm, I think maybe they're like 5 cows and, you know,
it's a big business.
You wake up in the morning,
a lot of work.
Well, listen, this is my vision. I still think rolling fields of green grass, and you wake up with
and
your checkered
shirt. You picture the farmer there with a bucket going like...
Of course, because that's what I've always seen.
Is that the reality, or are there
well,
big
are,
machines?
They're rolling green hills. They're definitely that. They are
okay,
checkered shirts.
That's one check on my vision, yes.
Checkered shirts, yes, check.
Do you guys wear farmer-like boots?
I...
Oh, no, now that's too cowboyish. Yes. Never mind.
I have a gumboot collection, actually.
So I'm not too disappointed.
No, you wouldn't be disappointed. Don't worry about that. But we don't hand milk our cows. We have big machines that do it for us, thankfully. Otherwise, we'd be there all day, all night.
And how many cows are we talking?
We're milking in our one dairy about 1,200, and in our other dairy about 400 at the moment.
Oh my goodness. That is, I'm just thinking, that is a lot of cows, and that's a lot of formalities.
Yes.
And this is, it really is, for lack of a better term, a big business.
It is a big business. These days in agriculture, if you've got 5 cows, you're not going to make it anyway. So it's economy of scale in all fields of agriculture these days. Unless you are big and you're mechanized and you are, you know, on top of what's going on and what's modern, you're not going to be a success.
You mentioned the heat stroke a little earlier. What did that do to business during December?
The heat wave. Oh. Yeah. So typically when it's really hot, the milk production, the cows will drop a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
That particular heat wave, when the cows were at the dairy, we were hosing them down to cool them off a bit.
Wow.
And then I think the thing that really hit home was we have a river that runs through our farm and the cows go over the bridge to milk. And that day the cows just decided that they were going to, you know, park off in the river for a bit and cool down.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, they made an executive decision.
They made an executive decision and they had a pool party and everyone else had to wait.
500 cows at a little pool party, I think.
And, you know, I think they're very intelligent animals.
They all
have their little personalities and their best friends.
Yes, they do. They do have best friends. You can notice, so when cows are babies on the farm, we have them in groups of five in a little house,
mm-hmm.
and they get fed their milk there and looked after there. And then quite often in the dairy herd, when they're 3-4 years old, you can see them hanging out with a calf of, you know, that's this next number to her. So they each get a number.
Yeah.
And they're obviously sequential. So you can see who's friends.
Yeah.
It happens.
It's like a whole clique.
It
Who
is.
Knew that cows would have clicks and crews? Like, what is this world becoming, really?
Aren't you glad you're vegetarians, yeah?
Well, yeah, let's not get into that. I'm staying well away from that. But I would like to know as well, you have this huge, huge farm. Do you have any pets of your own?
Yes. So my
Please
boyfriend
tell me
and
it's
I...
like 18 dogs and 12 budgies and like
okay,
six cats.
It's not
cats.
That bad. My boyfriend and I have... two dogs together. They're Canis Africanus, so they were bred for hunting in the townships, and we have homed them, so we've got two of those. Now my boyfriend's going to work overseas in New Zealand to further his career in dairy, so I've moved home with my parents.
Uh-oh.
Which is fine, they're like roommates, they're not really like and my mom has a Great Dane, one of those big spotty dogs,
yeah,
and then she's got another township special. And then we've got one from Phoenix in Durban.
Uh-huh.
And we've got a little, what you call a bedroom pup. So she's a little Maltese poodle. She's actually my dog. So she sleeps on the bed with me. And then we've got a multitude of cats.
Yes.
Two horses. And I did have
a goat. That's what I was waiting for. You see, it goes from cats to horses. Yeah. Yeah. Is there like a little hamster in the equation as well?
No. When I was little, I had hamsters.
See,
no,
I knew.
No,
any rabbits?
Animals. No, I don't have that. I had a goat.
Yes, I knew it.
I had a goat. His name was Pedro. He was amazing. But then Pedro got attacked by one of my mom's dogs had to go to Jesus, which was very sad.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You say sorry while laughing. You're so insensitive.
Oh. No, I just love that. Like, I can imagine my parents telling me that. Like, yes. Once we had a dog that wouldn't, he was just getting vicious and violent. And one day when I was in the bath, I got out the bath and the dog was gone. And they told me, no, he went to
How
a farm. I was maybe 9 years old.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I know.
He went to Jesus.
Well, they told me they took him to the vet and the vet said, no, he knows someone who can use this dog. And,
shame.
When did they break it to you, Jonathan?
You know, they still haven't. I don't think I want to know the truth. Yeah. They were very convincing.
He's in a farm. He's in a farm somewhere. It's absolutely fine. So listen, Stacey, I think like if you ever need someone to visit, I'd like to, you know, see your horses and see the
swing by.
I won't promise I'll milk any cows.
No, you don't have to do that.
Nor don't think I'll be good with training dogs, but I think...
Well, come and see.
Yeah, I'll be good to like walk around, etc., etc. Back to the Brandfield Dog Project. What do you have to say are some of your hopes for the future with the project and any more work that you'd like to do with animals?
Definitely one of my more immediate hopes is to sterilize as many animals as we can. So we are busy fundraising at the moment. Got a lovely lady called Lee who's organizing that for us. So hopefully we will be able to prevent as many puppies as possible. So that's our immediate plan. Things like vaccinations. So we do have rabies in Moirova. It's a disease that's caused a bit of problems. So that's an ongoing goal to vaccinate as many as we can. Long term, I think if I can see in 10 years' time some of those kids coming to me and saying, I work in the police department, I'm a dog handler, or
oh, wow.
I train dogs, or I'm a manager on a dairy farm, or, you know, I'm a jockey, I don't know, you know, anything around animals, then I'll be like, I achieved that. We did that. That's great. And I'll, you know, we've done
it. Or even if they just say, I take care of my own dog properly.
Yes,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just, that's enough.
That's enough, yeah. I said, baby steps, small achievements, that's what counts.
Yes.
But now, if anyone were to help you out, how could they go about it? Is there maybe a volunteer program or something like that you need?
Yes, well, we're always looking for volunteers, people that can help in any way. What I always say to people when they approach me and say that they want to help, ask what their area of expertise is. So, you know, if someone's in marketing, that's great. They could help us with marketing. If someone's in veterinary, you know, or works for a drug company, they could help us with, you know, medications from the drug company. So if people are interested in helping, they are more than welcome to. Just send, you can send me an email. My email address is Bruntville Dog Project. So that's Bruntville dogproject@gmail.com. Or they can phone me on 082-887-4068. Being a, you know, like a volunteer project, it's we're always looking for people to help out. Companies, whoever wants to help. So give me a shout. That'd be really great.
Yes.
Yes.
And I think they can also like your Facebook page, because I'm just scrolling through it and I'm like, oh my goodness, I feel like I know so much about the whole project now. You know, starting off 2016 with what they call Dip Day. Please explain that, because I think that's interesting. What's Dip Day?
Dip Day happens once a month. The dogs in the township are, you know, in a city, we would typically use a product like Frontline or Bravecto, give it to our dog to prevent fleas and ticks. In the townships, there's quite a high tick population, and things, diseases like biliary or ehrlichia are carried by ticks, obviously. So we want to try and prevent that as much as possible. Also, just for the comfort of the dogs, you know, if they've got a last infestation, that's not very comfortable at all. So once a month, we bring our big buckets and our water with us, and everyone gets a bath.
Wow.
Which is a bit of a mission, but
yeah, I can just imagine.
Just with my dog, it's a mess. And then multiply that by like 53. Yeah, that's kind of...
We're on a field, so it's, you know, there's no one worries about getting messy.
Imagine like 80 odd dogs, just, you know, where they do that shake.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I know that happens. Everyone's covered. When I go home, I have a good shower.
Yeah. A good scrub and a half. And also, you guys spoiled your dogs and the kids for Christmas. That's kind of awesome. What did you guys do for Christmas?
We had a fantastic day. Well, it was just really one of our classes. A lot of people have donated stuff from, you know, caps. We've had a lovely couple, Charles and Janae, from wherever they own a clothing factory in Lesotho. So they made beautiful caps for us, which is great. So each child got a cap,
which
really brands the project and, you know, gives the children something that they feel they belong to. So each child got a cap, then sweetie packs. We had a donation of textbooks. So each child got textbooks. We had pen donations. We had all sorts of random bits and pieces. So we put them into goodie bags for the children, and each child got a goodie bag.
That's awesome.
So it was something. And then also treats for the dogs in there, little information pamphlets for the dogs. We've also had competitions in the past. We had a kennel building competition, which was
How did that turn out?
Our winner of the kennel building competition was a girl called Kwanele, who's the only girl in our class, actually.
Wow!
And she won it. So
you wouldn't think that the girl would win the kennel building
she
competition.
She showed up all the boys.
Awesome!
And her dog is Rita. Rita, who is a boy, and Rita has a pink kennel.
You know what?
Well, there's a couple of things I'm picking up on there. Hey, he's a boy. Okay, anyway.
Gwyneth is good and she's going on doing her best.
So that's oftentimes, I think with animals, you give them a name and then maybe later you'll find out that your budgie is actually a female and you're like, we'll keep the name.
Yeah.
Like the first thing you need to go through. Anyway, let's not judge. Stacey Keane, thank you very much for stopping by this morning.
Thank you, Sia.
It's been absolutely awesome getting to know more about you and the organization as a whole. It's really raising great awareness.
Yes, I definitely think so. And I hope that it will continue to grow.
Yes, that's awesome stuff. So that's Stacey Keane from the Bruntville Dog Project, a dog training project all about teaching children the importance of animals in our world and exposing them to career opportunities involving animals. Just like that, Jonathan, done and dusted.
It's done, yeah. I'm sure Ainsley will be back next week.
Yes.
And But, I think it was a really informative show. I really enjoyed it.
Yes.
It always flies by. So.
And I think for hosting the hour, we didn't sing Circle of Life.
You know, we actually have that on our system.
Should not.
I'm telling you, we have it on our system.
Just at the end of the day, it is an animal show. But alas, you know what? It's fine. Let's not get too comfortable on these seats. Thank you so much for listening to us for the hour. Until next week, Ainsley will be back. This has been Animal Central on cliffcentral.com.
Animal Central on CliffCentral.com. This is CliffCentral.com.